Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors would love to sell 1,000 Fords this year. That's one of many great products they have there. Great sales staff. They deal with you personally. Awesome service department. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. After Penn State disposed of Nebraska last night, Maryland played Iowa, and Iowa had another dramatic finish that this time did not go their way.
Final 14 seconds. And it goes to Cowan. Bohannon's on him. Cowan will drive. Goes to the rim. Throws up a shot. It's no good. The tip by Bruno was good with 7 seconds to go. And the Terps lead it 66-65.
That is my man, Johnny Holiday. You know what? Johnny's remarkable. And I think you'd be even more so if you know how old. I mean, Johnny's up in his late 70s now. He sounds better than ever. We're going to try and get Johnny on the show next week. Because when he and I get together, it is. My problem is I can't stop laughing. He is one of the absolute great guys on the planet. Although today, Don Fisher in Indiana called me this afternoon. And Fish and I were talking for about 10 minutes. And, you know, they had a tough one last night. Purdue won, 46 was the final?
Yeah, or 46-45 or whatever, yeah.
46-45. And I said, Don, I said, you do know. I said, that you guys combined for fewer points than Penn State scored last night.
Said, I thought Bo Ryan snuck into the gym or something. It was circa Wisconsin ball. It's like, wow.
He says, Steve, he says, I know you've had a few games like that in your lifetime. I said, yeah, you have to. I said, Don, you have to come up with 18 different ways of saying no good. That way you're not redundant. All right. The Penguins have played well of late. They beat Philadelphia. They beat Connor McDavid in Edmonton. They lost to Calgary. Then they bounced right back with a 6-5 win over the Rangers. And won last night 4-3 over the Devils. David Putty was there last night, Seinfeld fans, and took a header next to the Devils bench. Steve Mears, the TV play-by-play voice of the Pens. Steve, great to have you with us.
Hey, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. Since Malkin has come back from the one-game suspension, he only had 18 goals before the suspension. It kind of felt like he was going along. What's been different for him?
Well, I think you're starting to see him, for one thing, shooting the puck more. That's one thing Mike Sullivan has been looking for from both him and Phil Kessel. And everything was going well. I forget what the shot total was, something like 16 in three games and 7 in the game over the weekend against the Rangers. So I think that's one of the best signs, is that he's just shooting, getting those shots on goal. However, last night, 0 shots on goal. So it was kind of a regression from what we had seen. Poor game. It just wasn't as dynamic as we saw on the weekend from him or Kessel. Neither of them had a shot last night. But the good thing is the Penguins got some scoring from different sources, and I thought they defended really well in the second period and ultimately were able to hang on for a 4-3 victory against a Devils team that's given them some trouble over the last couple of seasons. You can't lose 4 games to a last-place team and expect to make the playoffs in any given season. So the Penguins were able to salvage something out of the season series, got the 2 points, which are necessary and of really important here at this time of year with it being so tight in the Eastern Conference, and I think there was a lot to like last night at Newark.
Back-to-back one-goal victories. Beat the Rangers 6-5, beat the Devils last night 4-3. you have to do certain things to make sure you secure wins like that. What was the common thread between the two that allowed them to get a pair of one-goal victories?
Yeah, there's a lot of offense here lately. That's the one thing. And that's never been the issue for the Penguins. You know, if you think back decades, this has been a team that's known to have skill and can score. And here this year, we're seeing it. They're one of the best offensive teams in the league, very dynamic, led by Crosby and Malkin and company, Letang having a career year. So I think if you put up six on the board against the Rangers and you get another four last night, I think it's five of the last six games they've had four or more.
Right.
So the offense is there, and the defense is coming along. I really like what I'm seeing defensively ever since Justin Schultz came back. For those who don't know, missed 53 games due to a broken leg, missed 4 months, and he has come back, and the return has just been seamless. I think he really deserves a lot of credit. And the fact that he's right-handed makes a big difference. So now, on the Penguins' defensive pairs, on all three, you have that lefty-righty dynamic that you ideally would like to have. One left-handed D-man, one right-handed D-man, Schultz being the right-handed one on a pair with Jack Johnson. And I think it's working really well. It's an aspect that probably doesn't get talked about all that much. But now with Schultz and Chad Ruweedel, who's right-handed, I think it helps out with the puck movement, and the name of the game for the Penguins is get the puck up quickly and get it in the hands of those supremely talented forwards like Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel and company, and they've been able to do that here these last four or five games. I like what I've seen, especially on the offensive side, and they're getting the finish too.
Let's get to Matt Murray for a moment. Early in the season, you know, he struggled, and then he was out for a period of time. Then he came back. Now it seems of late he has found a groove out there. As you've observed him, Steve, what's allowed him to look a bit better as time has gone?
Yeah, I think it's just his poise and his mental toughness. That's the greatest strength for me. I'm such a fan of his mental approach for a guy who is only 24 and is still the seventh youngest goalie in the NHL. We forget about that. We think of him as this veteran because he's won two Stanley Cups and has had numerous playoff victories and big game performances in the postseason, but he's still incredibly young, relatively speaking, especially for that position. So there's no doubt the lower body injury that you talked about there, that was bothering him. He missed a month, decided to shut it down. He tried to play through it, didn't want to use it as an excuse, but it was obviously something that was an issue. So then he comes back and he rattles off this incredible winning streak, and he looks like the Matt Murray of old. He won 10 of 11 last night, thought he was solid, gave up the one last goal, was a little leaky against Miles Wood, but overall, what is it, 5 losses in 2 months for Matt Murray. I really think he is back after some struggles early on in the season, and for him, a lot of it is just about staying healthy. He's had these kind of nagging injuries that have plagued him throughout his career. He's also dealt with a couple of concussions, including one earlier this year, so for me, a lot of it has to do with health, and the good thing is when Matt Murray has gone down with some type of a bump or a bruise, Casey DeSmith has been able to step right in there, and he's been excellent really all season long. So the goaltending looking very good. I know Jim Rutherford, Mike Sullivan have a lot of confidence in the two guys that they have.
I know in football sometimes Jack Hamm and I will talk about time of possession. It doesn't figure into every game, obviously, but we'll, you know, if it's a factor. I've always felt the Penguins have been great in helping out their goaltenders because of puck possession. Have they been better with puck possession the last couple of weeks?
That's been the name of the game in the NHL for quite a while here. And it kind of goes back to what I was talking about with that transition. You want to defend really well, then be in the offensive zone. Get it out of your end as quickly as possible, but maintain possession. And I think a big part of that these last few games has been having one left-handed defenseman, one right-handed defenseman.
Right, yeah.
And also having Justin Schultz back. I mean, this guy is so underrated. And he could be on a top pair on a lot of teams in this league, but he's kind of overshadowed on a team with Chris Letang and Brian Dumoulin. He's not going to get a whole lot of number one power play time. And he misses 4 months, and that wasn't really talked about when the Penguins were struggling, how much they missed him. But he's one of the most underrated players on the roster. And now to have him back after a serious injury, and he looks fantastic. And he's chipping in with a few points here and there, and he's just a great puck mover. He's amazing at what he's able to do. He defends well, but then he gets it out of the zone quickly and is able to complete an accurate pass, get it up to those forwards, which is where you want the puck going. Get it going north and get it in the hands of Crosby and Malkin. No doubt that he has made a huge difference So I think him, also Marcus Pedersen was a trade acquisition earlier in the year. And that was talked about quite a bit because they gave up a good young player in Daniel Sprong. But Marcus Pedersen has put up just as many points as Daniel Sprong. He's a defenseman, and I think he's defended really well. So that was a nice pickup by Jim Rutherford. Young player, too. He's only 22 years of age, youngest defenseman that the Penguins have. And that's been a really solid acquisition. They see him with a real bright future.
Yeah, the left-right thing is really important. And that goes back to the time, you know, when I started watching hockey in the 70s, for goodness sakes. But you have to have the sync to work with somebody. Schultz is out 53 games. Have you been surprised at all with the ease with which he and Johnson fit together back there, despite the fact they have not worked together very often in their careers?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's a testament to just their abilities and the fact that you're talking about two veterans there. Schultz has been in the league now a long time. He's a two-time Stanley Cup champion. We remember how good he was in 2017 when Chris Letang was out for the season, and Schultz stepped up. He was unbelievable in the playoffs, had a career year, put up some big numbers. And Jack Johnson, you know, there are all these advanced stats, and the analytics community is all against Jack Johnson and everything. And I do think there is a place for those advanced stats in hockey, and the teams agree with that. There is a place for it. But it's this absolutist position that some of these analytics people have where they completely write off a guy as he's somehow irredeemable because he has some type of bad Corsi or bad puck possession numbers. It's absolutely ridiculous. I think he's been solid. Jim Rutherford addressed this. There was an article today, and he talked about not being too happy with some of the criticism that Jack Johnson has faced. The guy leads the team in hits. He's top 10 in the league in that category. It's definitely not easy. He's second on the team in shot blocks. For the most part, he's defended pretty well. He's been a part of one of the best penalty kill units in the league, and a big part of that, Mike Sullivan always gives him credit for his penalty killing game that he's brought this season. And he brings an element that the Penguins didn't have a whole lot of, a little bit of toughness and some grit on the blue line. You can't have just all puck movers. So there might be some advanced stats that say Jack Johnson's really struggling. There's certainly some merit to that. I think it's a tool that can be used by these NHL teams, but it is not the end-all, be-all.
I agree.
And there will be exceptions, as there are with every rule. So I think that's one thing that has to be kept in mind. Johnson's been really solid.
That's what's always has struck me about analytics. You feel about analytics the way I do, whether I'm doing football, basketball, or some baseball that I do. Analytics have a great use. They are a great tool to look at, but it's also a tool to look at. Observation's important as well. And sometimes you look at somebody and say, okay, that doesn't fit what I'm seeing. And I sense that when it comes to him, that's a case where you're looking at him on an every-game basis, and it doesn't fit the narrative of what the numbers say.
Of course, yes. You have to pass the eye test.
Yes.
It's been talked about quite a bit with so many different aspects of the game. And there are going to be exceptions to every rule. I think you have... Yeah. You have your toolbox, right? And you've got this as one tool, but it's that absolutist position that I can't stand, and you see it on Twitter all the time, like this complete write-off of a guy because one stat says that he's not proficient in a certain area, but he's bringing a lot of other things to the game.
Right.
So that's the part that annoys me. And then a lot of the other really beneficial things that that person or that program would bring to the table, it gets written off because of some of the ridiculous viewpoints that they have. And the other thing in hockey, as you talk about some of the other sports, hockey is a very emotional game. It is not quite the same as baseball and one-on-one matchups and so forth. Extremely emotional game. I always go back to 2014, and the Penguins played the New York Rangers, and the Penguins had total control of the series.
Yep.
Marty St. Louis' mother, unfortunately, passed away midway through the series. And the Rangers rallied behind that. They rallied around it. They ultimately came back from a 3-1 deficit. They won in seven games. And I always say, okay, tell me the advanced stat that explains the Rangers before the sad passing of his mother and after with the way that they played. It's an emotional game, and that was certainly an emotional situation.
Mm-hmm.
And by their logic, that should have continued. Whatever they were doing after the fact should have continued, should have been there before. But obviously... there were other factors at play there, and it was a big reason why the Rangers won that year. That's one thing I always go back to. But there are countless other examples. It's an emotional sport, and a lot of times it comes down to a bounce and maybe just some will.
Steve, one final question. I'll let you go. I appreciate your time very much. Stadium Series is coming up. How do you feel about those games, the atmosphere of it, and obviously the unpredictability of what the weather might be this weekend?
Yeah, I've seen some of the forecasts. Always interesting. It's always one of the main subplots of the whole narrative with the weather. So, you know, see some rain, that's not good because obviously you'd rather have a little bit of snow. You'd like to have a nice overcast day or just a cold night in this case. But I'm sure there's a contingency plan, as there have been for all of these. The NHL, when you think about it, with the outdoor games, they've gotten unbelievably lucky.
Oh, yes, they have.
Yeah, for the number of games that have been played outdoors, and the number of them, a large majority, have been under perfect weather conditions. Yeah. Even the ones in California weren't too hot. Some of the ones in snowy Minnesota, I called one of the games in Minnesota. It was the perfect setting, overcast, just the right amount of snow.
Yeah.
And in New York, the same thing at Yankee Stadium and a bunch of other ones. So they've gotten really lucky. I hope that string of luck continues, and it's going to be an awesome event. I can't wait for it because you have the rivalry. I think the best rivalry in hockey. It's going outdoors for a second time. They played at Heinz Field 2 years ago, so it's the first ever outdoor rematch. And there's a little bit of animosity, if you remember last week, Evgeny Malkin, the stick-swing incident on Michael Roffel, and he was suspended one game. So that just adds a little more spice to an already heated rivalry, and you have the geography. You're going to have a huge crowd. I think it's going to be an unbelievable event. Can't wait for it, and we'll see how the weather holds up. But I'm sure no matter which way it goes, they have a contingency plan, and the game will be played one way or another.
Steve, you do great work. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I was so sad I missed David Putty wiping out last night. I wanted to, since you mentioned it, I only saw him out of the corner of my eye. We were just coming out of break, so I haven't even seen it yet. But I will make sure that I check that out since I'm a big Seinfeld fan. And he was in full character. Face paint, chest, shirt, jersey off. He was going crazy.
I saw that. Yeah, and I'm a Seinfeld fan. We took whatever. I just saw that and I thought, you got to be kidding me. Steve, thanks so much.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Sunbury Motors Ford is getting the year off to a fast start. In January, SMC was right on pace to hit their goal of selling 1,000 new Fords in 2019. In February, Sunbury Motors will shift into high gear during its President's Day sales event. Choose from four city blocks of new Fords with savings up to $16,000. Pick from over 60 new Ford F-150 4x4s priced as low as $29,934. Deals on new 2019 Ford Fiestas are in overdrive. SMC has them starting at just $12,820.
And it gets 35 mpgs.
Select from over 45 Ford Escapes, and they're slashed to an amazing price of $17,820. SMC has an incredible deal on a 2018 Ford Fusion, discounted down to $17,770. Sunbury Motors' goal of 1,000 new Fords in 2019 will give all of Central PA the largest discounts on new Fords in recent history. In February, SMC wants to put you into victory lane and become a member of their 1,000 Club of 2019. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Great to have you with us, little Phil Collins.
Bob Buehner told me before he left for New Zealand that he and Alice were going to go see Phil Collins down there.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Well, as far as I know, he and Alice are back from their three-week trip, so.
Good.
Yeah.
Can't wait to catch up with them.
Yes.
You know, can't wait to catch up with them. Man, you know, maybe we, like Bob and Alice, you and I ought to go to dinner and try to think of anybody else we should bring. Maybe Roger wants to go.
That's an even number. Yeah, Roger, Kyle, six, even
Kyle?
Number. Sure.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Lawrence, bring Mark along.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie.
She'd love it.
It'd be terrific. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. Oh, Cotrillo.
Okay.
Sammy.
Yep.
Sammy.
Yep. Okay, we're up to 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take over the place. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anybody else? I would have invited Coach Hort, but the other guy made him quit.
We got to find out if when Horty's going to be back from FLA. Still down there.
Will he be back in time to collect his award?
I would think so. Yeah, because that's first. I thought the PABs in Hershey were first Monday in May. First or second Monday in May is when they normally have that.
Oh, man, I was hoping for the second Wednesday.
Yeah, we should tell them, yeah, this is 2 days before the Purdy. You really need to be out on the links practicing.
That's right.
Yeah. You hear? And he just walked in. He just turned the corner. You need to get a couple rounds in so your back doesn't go out this year. Okay, then do both. Get the adjustment in.
Oh, you mean his back? I thought you were talking about his game. All right, so.
Both, yes.
By the way, Mr. Ham's new weapons, as he told me on a voicemail this morning, are somewhere over Nebraska. They have been ordered. They are on their way.
Love that he calls them weapons and not clubs.
That's what we refer to them as, weapons. Okay. We play at a country club. We use weapons. So he needs to have a series of back adjustments before he plays golf with us.
Probably only one will do the trick for him. I just want him out at least practice, at least get nine in or a full round in before the tournament this year.
His attitude about practice is the same as Allen Iverson. Practice. You're talking about practice.
Just go down there, aim for the bridge, get it out of the way, then we're good for tournament day.
How about if we just skip that hole? For safety's sake.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. They want to sell 1,000 Fords this year. They will. They have a great staff, a great product. They do, I mean, everything is one-on-one with you. This isn't trying to push you toward anything. It's trying to get you into the right vehicle that fits you. Service department's awesome. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We just want to take one quick moment. Want to pass along our well wishes to our great friend Greg Wetzel. Bouncing back. And he'll be back in full go mode pretty soon. But we want to wish our best to our good friend. So, wanted to do that.
We hear that he should be good enough to get to Wrestling Nationals. He and Justin Michaels are broadcast guys for the Lewisburg football games on 100.9 The Valley. They're going to do a little road trip to Pittsburgh for the wrestling championships next month. So, yes.
Yes, Mr. Ham asked me about tickets for that yesterday. I said, oh, my goodness. I said,
yesterday?
Let me put it to you this way, okay? I dropped it by somebody yesterday, and the door might be open because it doesn't hurt to be him.
This is true.
Okay.
This is true.
Okay.
This is a situation where, yes, this is one of those, yes.
All right. Yeah. I also mentioned Kevin wanted to go. Kevin Herr. How does one describe a blank stare on the air? All right. So, okay. Penn State basketball won last night, 95-71 over Nebraska. 29 for Lamar Stevens, 21 for Rajir Bolton last night. Shot 56% from the field, 50% in threes last night. And they won with relative ease. Let's bring in Nate Bauer, Blue White Illustrated. Nate, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Great to be here. What's going on? How are you?
Oh, they point me toward whatever I talk. It's just, you know, another day, another storm. So,
sure.
That's how it works. Dick Girardi and I, had been sensing that they were getting close to doing something like they did last night. What about you as you watched? Were you surprised by what you saw last night, or did you think that they were getting close to doing something like that?
So, two points. The first is I was more concerned about Nebraska in the sense of I didn't know what to expect from Nebraska. Tim Miles is potentially hot seat territory. I think that's
safe to say.
Right.
And so, you know, traditionally, I mean, you've seen this, I've seen this. You know, teams that are in that position that come into the Bryce Jordan Center, it kind of works twofold. One is they usually play pretty well, and two, Penn State usually doesn't play that well in those types of games. You know, against what I would call wounded teams. You know, Penn State has no-showed at times under those circumstances. So, you know, I didn't really know what to expect from Nebraska, but as soon as you saw Penn State kind of build up that double-digit lead within the first 10 minutes of the game, you know, you kind of knew. I mean, Nebraska defensively was just a sieve. Penn State was really doing basically anything they wanted. And, you know, when you get guys that are actually hitting shots to go on top of that, it creates the type of atmosphere that they had last night.
What is it said about the players themselves and also how they've been used, that a couple of them seem to hit the wall in mid-January, usually February 1st is the mythical wall, and now have bounced back the way they have?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. I think that it's – you can't blame any of them, freshmen on up, for probably having experienced some discouragement.
Sure.
At the beginning of January. I mean, you know, all of those games, Alabama, NC State, you know, even out at DePaul, like those were games that Penn State had opportunities to win. And I think Penn State knew that any one of those would have been resume boosters. I mean, just take yourself back to that point in the season. Resume was something that they were concerned about, that they wanted to have, and you know, the aspirations of the NCAA tournament were still very much on the table given how strong the schedule was. So when you miss those chances, and Rajir Bolton has as bad of a day as he does out at DePaul, you know, it can wear on you. And so you know, combine that with the experience out at Michigan, you know, I don't think that it's a stretch to say that, you know, they really no-showed against Wisconsin. They were just down in the dumps. I mean, that, you know, the way that kind of transpired with Pat Chambers, it led to a negativity or downtroddenness, I think, that also helped, you know, basically make those guys hit that wall. So the fact that they were able to, as a team, stick through it, to me, a lot of that credit has to go to Lamar Stevens, because he's the one who's picking those guys up. And frankly, Steve, he's the one with the most on the line.
Yeah.
He's the one with the, you know, look, this kid wanted to change Penn State basketball. And so when you have the experience or the success of last year, seeing to parlay that into a great year this year, and it did not go the way that he planned for it early in the season, you know, and it took a lot of guts and a lot of courage for him to keep everybody on the same page.
Not only that, but he's also, whenever he's interviewed, and I talked to Pat about this last night, that when he's interviewed, he has made sure that he's talked about what Pat has meant.
Yep.
To all of this. I mean, what?
Yep.
How much does that help when the star player that can be the focal point that can go south and just go out and get his has not?
Yeah, no, I think you make a great point. He has it has not been lost on me that he has gone out of his way at times to praise Pat. Because here's the thing, is like, these guys are all aware. They know what's being said. They know what's out there.
Sure.
And when you're 0-10, you can't avoid it. You know, and even before 0-10, 0-7, 0-8, you know, those things, as they kept building and building and building, you know, Lamar, you know, kind of refused to say, oh, well, you know, forget it. You know, players check out. Like, that can happen. You know, guys can just say,
believe me, I think we watched an example of it last night with all due respect.
No doubt. Yep, no doubt. And so for Lamar to have the buy-in that he has, and for the entire program, like, at some point, and I'm sure you noticed it, Pat went from being, dispirited, I would say. I don't know if that's the right word. I mean, obviously, he always brings a positivity to what he does. But there, you could see the way that things were wearing on him. And at some point, it just kind of flipped where it was like, look, this is the hand that has been dealt this season. And you can either take that hand and go home with it and just say, well, better luck next year, or right. You can try to make something out of it, you know? And, right. And I think that this idea of getting better and development, he latched onto that, and it really, really, really has paid dividends, because now you're seeing it. You're seeing it in all of these guys, up and down the lineup. For guys who, you might not even have high expectations for, but Jamari Wheeler is a much better player today than he was last year at this time.
Right.
And that is significant. He might not ever be, Steph Curry, open three-point shooting kind of stuff, but if he can get into the lane and distribute and get the ball right. to open shooters, that's a huge component to support.
There's the other part, too, is that the scoring part. Scoring in this league in the last 2 weeks has plummeted. A good example, like I said, I just got off the phone with Don Fisher, and Don did a game last night with Purdue, where Purdue and Indiana combined to get fewer points than Penn State scored last night. Yep. And even Iowa and Maryland, I mean, Nate, I expected points in that game between those two. Yep. But yeah, Penn State's the team that has scored over 70 in two of its last three games.
They have steadily climbed from the absolute bottom of the conference. You know, look, there's an element here of the first seven games that they played could not have been harder, right? Like the defensive teams right. that they were facing. That contributed. Penn State had some problems scoring the ball, no doubt about it. But, who you're playing matters, and where you're playing them matters. It's tough to score 75 points at Nebraska.
Right.
You know, it's tough to score 70 at Michigan. You know, so I do think that they, again, they stuck with it. And frankly, that this weave that they're running now, you know, they're not mm-hmm. – They're getting the ball tight,
but it's creating ball movement. It's making defenses correct. Move.
Correct. And so when you have that, I think they've tapped into something that works on top of the defense. You know, the three-quarter-court press. I mean, once they started going to that, it really has paid dividends, and I think that they've returned to that well over and over because they understand that's how they're going to get their points.
But you can set that up when you score.
Absolutely.
Everything goes hand in hand here. I mean, if you're yep. going through a shooting slump, we'll go to the 1-2-2. Well, you can't, okay? Like, because you're backpedaling.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes that takes an open shot from beyond the arc, but also sometimes that just takes getting a bucket close, to the basket.
Sure.
And I think that, I mean, even Lamar's misses right now look like they're going down.
Right.
They look like they're going in. So when you start to inspire some confidence, you start to get a little bit of that mojo going, I think there's a little bit of a rehash of what happened to this team last year. It's just a question of whether or not it's too little too late. And obviously, I mean, they're very, very, very much on the outside looking in for any type of postseason
sure.
appearance. But certainly any type of run in the Big Ten tournament isn't out of the question. I don't think there's a team in the Big Ten that's going to want to play these guys. And just in general, make the first goal to work your way out of the first day of the Big Ten tournament.
Right.
Get to Thursday. Thursday.
Well, now they're going to face a team that is also in the exact same category.
Yep.
One 4 in a row. What's interesting is that when I watch Illinois play now over their last five games, I feel like I'm looking at a group of believers.
Yep.
Brad Underwood has them believing
yep.
that not only can they play, but they can beat anybody like they did with Michigan State a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm, you know, you beat Michigan State. You know, that's a huge win, and I think that has helped kind of propel them forward. But it's, in a lot of ways, they're similar to Penn State too in terms of how much they've found an identity defensively, and how much that defensive performance is able to spark points for them. So, you know, Penn State, the way that the schedule has played out this year, I don't think could have been any more challenging, in the sense that the teams that they played at the beginning of the Big Ten schedule were at their best at that point. And now they're facing, you know, what we would all call, coming into the season, the easier portion of the Big Ten schedule. And all these teams are playing pretty well, too. The bottom of the league is playing pretty well. So Illinois, Rutgers, these aren't gimme games in any capacity. Right. And Penn State's going to have to bring it to especially on the road.
Right. See, this is where we're tonight. Duke will play North Carolina. It is a marquee game in college basketball. But the ACC's biggest problem is the bottom of the league is not very good. Conversely, the bottom of the league in the Big Ten can beat the top of the league.
On a given night. Yep. Yeah. And if you look at KenPom, you know, the Big Ten and the ACC are kind of neck and neck in terms of the top eight teams, you know, are all 40 and up, you know, something like that. I don't have the stat in front of me right now.
State's 48, by the way.
Right. Which is my Blue White Illustrated intern, Dave Eckert, actually pointed out today that only once in the past, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, has there been a team with a losing record in the top 50. Of KenPom at the end of the season. So, you know, certainly the table is set there for Penn State to, you know, again, keep not only keep winning, but keep itself in its standing pretty high in those metric ratings, and then get people to understand, like, look, this is the type of season that they had. You know, this was not a bad team. It was a decent team that just had some crummy luck, some officiating, and you know, some of their own making, for sure, to come out on the wrong end of some of these games.
One final question that deals with Josh Reeves. He hit 1,000 last night.
Yeah.
And I made the comment after the game that I think now that might relax him a little bit. I think defensively he's played terrifically. I felt like he has pressed offensively. I think now that he's hit that milestone, you might see a more relaxed guy out there. And I think it's going to make a big difference to him, because I don't think he's letting the game come to him because he's trying to force everything so much.
It's just been, you know, that's the story of his season, is pressing. You know, and it's hard to get people to understand sometimes that trying really hard can sometimes actually be to your own detriment. And Penn State, in a lot of ways, it's not that Penn State basketball didn't care. You know, apathy is something that, again, like we saw last night with Nebraska, you see that sometimes with teams. That has never been the case with this team. In fact, it's the exact opposite, and a lot of it has contributed to their own problems. You know, Josh's urgency to be an agent of change that would help Penn State, you know, lift the program from where he came in as a freshman to where it is now and bump it over the top. I don't think there's any question that played a role in a lot of his struggles that he's had this season.
I saw that in Jayshon Tate last year with Ohio State.
Yeah. And so these guys, you know, it's never that they don't care or that they're just wild and out of control. It's that they care too much. And, you know, for Josh, it's been good to see for him over these last five games, whatever it's been, for him to at least settle into the type of defense where he's not sitting on the bench. That, I mean, look, he's been on the bench with 2 fouls in the first half for too many games throughout the season, not just even the Big Ten. So for him to be able to key in on his defense, allow that to open up some things offensively. Is he going to be a spot up 3-point shooter? Is that leap ever going to happen? And is it going to happen down the stretch here? I don't know, but certainly he has an opportunity to get some easy buckets. Jamari Wheeler has helped with that, to get some decent assists, and still be a good contributor offensively, where teams have to play him, you know, honestly.
Well, honestly, we have to go to a break. So, Nate, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time very much.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
And we will take that break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, Duke, North Carolina coming up tonight. First time they've met this season. Usually they meet the Wednesday right after the Super Bowl, but you're seeing now more and more. Michigan and Michigan State will play twice in the final 2 weeks. Marquette's going to play Villanova twice in the final 2 weeks. Tennessee and Kentucky are playing twice in the last 3 weeks. And Duke and North Carolina are going to play twice in the final 2 weeks.
That'll be a big ratings grabber tonight. I mean, no NBA to deal with.
Yeah. No NBA to deal with because it's Wednesday night, and usually ESPN carries the NBA on Wednesday night. They put Duke, North Carolina in its place tonight. Yeah, it's coming off the All-Star break, too. I don't think anybody's playing the NBA, are they? I think they're still in the All-Star break.
They are, yes.
Yeah, so they put Duke, North Carolina tonight. And it should be a big ratings grab. And yet, I still think Duke's going to win this game by 7 to 10 points. Their talent is just, in some ways, overwhelming. If they just had Zion Williamson, it'd be fine. But Barrett, Trey Jones, who's a great defensive stopper. I think North Carolina is very good, but I don't think North Carolina is great. And I think Duke will win the game by 7 to 10 tonight. I can't believe that Jerry Kill referred to P.J. Fleck as a self-promoter. Really? P.J. Fleck's probably sitting in his office in Minnesota right now saying, oh my goodness, they're catching on. Yep. Time to go out to the Yachty store and buy another Knorr. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Mark Brennan's going to join us on the show tomorrow. And the King makes his first appearance in 2 weeks.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.